and in just a moment, we'll hear an interview I recorded last fall with singers Ronnie Gilbert and Holly Near. Near is a singer and songwriter who mostly performs women's music and political songs. Ronnie Gilbert was a member of the group The Weavers in the 1940s and 50s. Along with Pete Seeger, Lee Hayes, and Fred Hellerman, she performed folk music and labor songs. The Weavers became a commercial success and helped launch the folk revival, but because of the political content of their music, the Weavers were blacklisted in the 1950s. They broke up in 1955. In 1980, 25 years later, the Weavers reunited for a concert at Carnegie Hall in New York. The film Wasn't That a Time, which documented the reunion, included a rehearsal sequence of a duet between Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert. They were singing Near's song Hai Una Mujer, which Ronnie Gilbert sang in the reunion concert. Gilbert and Near enjoyed singing together, and their movie scene together was enthusiastically received by the film's audiences. They decided to tour together and record a duet album. We're going to hear the interview I recorded with them last year before their performance at the Academy of Music. They sang a few duets during the interview. Before we hear that session, let's listen to two records, first from the album of the 1980 Weavers Reunion, we'll hear Wasn't That a Time, then from the Ronnie Gilbert-Holly Near duet album Lifeline, we'll hear Harriet Tubman.
Our fathers bled at Valley Forge. The snow was red with blood, their faith was worn. At Valley Forge, their faith was brotherhood.
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time? A time to try. The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
Brave men who fought at Gettysburg now lie in soldiers' graves, but there they stemmed the rebel tide, and there the faith was saved.
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time? A time to try. The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
Informers took their Judas pay to tell their sorry tale. The gangs in Congress had their way, and free souls went to jail.
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time? A time to try. The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
How many times we've gone to kill in freedom's holy name, and children died to save the pride of rulers without shame.
Wasn't that a time?
Wasn't that a time?
A time to try. The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
Our faith cries out,
we have no fear. We dare to reach our hand to all our neighbors far and near, to friends in every land. Isn't this a time?
Isn't this a time?
Isn't this a time? A time to pray. The soul of man, isn't this a wonderful time? Isn't this a wonderful time?
Lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine. Come on up. I got a lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine. She said her name was Harriet Tubman, and she drove for the Underground Railroad. Hundreds of miles we traveled onward, gathering slaves from town to town, seeking every lost and found, setting those free that once were bound. Somehow my heart was growing weaker. I fell by the wayside, sinking sad. Firmly did this lady stand, lifted me up and took my hand, singing, come on up. I got a lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine. Come on up. I got a lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine. Who are these children dressed in red? They must be the ones that Moses led. Who are these children dressed in red? They must be the ones that Moses led. Singing, come on up. I got a lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine. Come on up. I got a lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine. She said her name was Harriet Tubman, and she drove for the Underground Railroad. Follow.
Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert singing Harriet Tubman. They were accompanied by pianist Jeff Langley. That record was preceded by The Weavers, featuring Ronnie Gilbert, as recorded in 1980. Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert recorded an interview and performance last year on Fresh Air. First, Holly Near told the story of how they got together.
I grew up on The Weavers, as many children of my time did. And my family had the Weaver albums, and we listened to them, and we sang them. I was a farm child. I lived out in Northern California on a tiny farm, so we didn't have a movie house to go to or a street corner to hang out on. So the music that was in our lives was real important. And when I was little, I saw the Weavers, and I remember seeing Ronnie throw her head back and sing, and I went home and stood out on the mountainside and threw my head back, and it worked, you know. It was like... And when I was in high school, I was in a folk group called the Freedom Singers, made up of three boys and myself. And before I joined the group, they fashioned themselves after the Kingston Trio. But when I joined, we fashioned ourselves after the Weavers, and I got to be Ronnie Gilbert. So she's been in my life a long time. She just didn't know it. And then the second album I did was called A Live Album, and I dedicated it to her. And her daughter called her up and said, Mom, do you know who this Holly Near person is? And she says, no. And I'll let Ronnie tell the rest of the story.
Yeah, well, I had actually not been listening to much music and over the previous couple of years. And like Holly says, my daughter Lisa said, have you ever heard of this person? I said, no. She said, well, she has a record out, and it's dedicated to you. And I said, how dare she? I said, what do you mean she has it dedicated to me? Suppose it's awful. What am I going to do with my name all over her record like a sponsor? That was kind of egocentric place, but that's where it came from. Anyway, the record finally did arrive. And I understood later that they had tried to find me, but I had changed my living area completely. Nobody much knew where I was. And I found this record to be so extraordinary. I just, when I think about it now, about going downstairs and putting it on the record player and ready to take it off in 3 minutes, and sure I would know exactly what it was like, and like all those other 60s little long-haired singers that sound as if they're sort of floating away into the ether. I don't want to hear any more of that stuff. And here comes out this vibrant voice and this and these extraordinary songs that seem to be like fingers reaching into all the places that I'd been thinking about for years and been concerned about, and that not just me but so many people had. And I just spent the whole day listening to that record, listening to songs and over again, just putting the needle back in places to hear that line over and over again, and crying. Oh, I shed more tears. My basement should have floated away in tears that day.
And what was your first meeting like?
Well, we've had a little trouble remembering exactly the sequence of all of that. So rather than just sit here and be confused with you on the air, I know we had telephone calls. We met each other at different times. Ronnie came up and visited me and my parents, which was very important to me to have my parents meet Ronnie because they had really introduced me to her music. And at some point, we sang together in New York at an anti-nuclear event. And we just I had flown in at the last minute, and Ronnie and I ran into the dressing room and ran a song and went out and did it. And there was such an organic response. I mean, people just had this outburst of, and we looked at it and said, what is this exactly? And because we had done that one section in the film together also. And that had been very moving for the both of us, but we'd never taken that out to a live audience before. And I think it just had to do with the coming together of times and of voices. Our voices go real well together, and they evoke an emotional response and a rejuvenation of people realizing that there has always been progressive music in this country, and there always will be, whether the radio stations decide to play it or not.
Could I ask you to sing a song together for us?
Sure.
Which would you like to do? Well, Pastures or Iona?
Pastures.
This is a great song Woody Guthrie wrote, speaking of tradition. I mean, beautiful, beautiful song, which I've heard sung by lots of different folks.
In different ways.
Yeah, real different styles. This version sounds nothing like how Woody originally sang it, but I hope he enjoys it wherever he may be. It's a mighty long road that these poor hands have hold. My poor feet have traveled a hot, dusty road out of your dust bowl, and westward we rode. The deserts were hot and the mountains were cold. I wandered all over this green growing land. Wherever your crops are, I've lent you my hand. On the edge of the city, you'll see us, and then we come with the dust and we go with the wind. California, Arizona, I've picked all your crops. Then it's on off to Oregon to gather your hops. Dig the beets from the ground, pick the grape from the vine, to set on your table your light. Sparkling wine, green pastures of plenty, from dry desert ground to the Grand Coulee Dam, where the waters run down. Every state in this union, us migrants have been. We'll work in this fight, and we'll fight till we win. It's always we ramble, that river and I. I'll roam your green valleys, I'll work till I die. This land I'll defend from corporate greed, for the pastures of plenty must always be free.
Oh, great. That sounded terrific. That's Ronnie Gilbert and Holly Near. Yeah. Ronnie, I wanted to ask you, how do you figure out your harmonies to songs? Do you score it beforehand or sing it through like that?
Sometimes Jeff will do that, but mostly we just sort of hear it And if we have any problem with a little piece or a little phrase, we ask each other's help. Jeff's very good at figuring that out. But mostly we sort of hear it in our heads, just out of a long tradition of singing harmony with one another. Holly's real good and quick at that. And
I'm much better at singing the melody, however. Ronnie's got a great ear for harmony. It's a good combination, too, because my voice is a little bit higher than Ronnie's, so that her lower tones always fit right into a nice harmony part underneath.
Ronnie, what was the first kind of music that you started to sing?
My earliest recollection was a song that went, I have a sweetheart, and mother is her name.
Aww.
She's dear to me as friend can be. No one loves me just the same. See, I can remember all those words. And I think I was about 4 years old at the time. And then the next thing I remember was singing, I'm putting all my eggs in one basket. I'm betting everything I got on you. My tap dancing class. And let's see, after that, I guess I went through Jeanette McDonald and Nelson Eddy and Judy Garland and Deanna Durbin. You don't remember Deanna Durbin, do you? But
I
loved
records.
Her. And all the little, you know, the little kid singers that were, and the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movies. I had opportunities to sing those things in public when I was very, very young. They used to do that with kids in those days. That was probably my first song that I didn't get to folk music as such until I was about 16 years old.
Yeah, what precipitated that?
I was working in Washington during the Second World War, and I met a group of people who were rehearsing in the basement of the house that I was living in. They were called the Priority Ramblers, and they used largely hymns and country western type things for songs for the war effort and for social issues. Well, war effort was certainly a social issue, but issues like black people not being able to find homes in Washington and servicemen coming back and not having places to put their families and that sort of thing, you know, as well as Round and Round Hitler's Grave, kind of fiddle tunes and so on. And I met this wonderful group of people who were very kind to very shy me, and I began to sing with them. And one of the women in the group, the one who was directly responsible for my coming in, became a very dear friend and is my lifelong friend. She has a music program up in the Albany, New York area, and knows more about folk music than practically anybody I know. Jackie Alper, her name is.
Holly, what was the first music you started singing? And what was the transition like to more issue?
My memory is not as clear as Ronnie's of what that first song is. Something about probably, oh, when the red robin goes bop, 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 and along was around the ear I came in. Because we lived out on the farm, we depended on our relatives who live on the East Coast, many of whom, by the way, live here in Philadelphia. So we are visiting with them while we're here. And they would send us records of the most recent Broadway shows, as well as some of the folk artists that they were liking in jazz. So I grew up on everything from the Weavers and Leon Biggs, Judy Hensky, and Melina McCurry, Edith Piaf, Judy Garland, Julie Andrews, and the music of Bertolt Brecht, Paul Robeson, and then Elvis Presley and Aretha Franklin and Patsy Cline. You know, a very diverse musical influence. And I didn't come from a community that needed to define or name those or put them in categories. So I didn't understand the concept of defining a style of music till I went to the city, where there was a lot more pressure to say, well, are you a country western singer, or are you a jazz singer, or are you, because people in the promotional departments of the music industry wanted to be able to promote the artist as something to make it more marketable.
And to a specific audience, you know, that audience is good for this, and this audience is good for that, and that audience is good for something else, and never the twain shall meet, you know.
It's very difficult now. I mean, we fight it all the time, of not wanting to be put in those, as Melvina Reynolds puts it, little boxes. And I would love to get past that need to say, well, are you a this or are you a that, both in life and in music, and to get to a place where we can, and also not assume that there are audiences that only like one kind of music. That's what's so wonderful about our audience, is you know that people who are in that audience cannot, their ideas, their belief systems, and their musical tastes cannot be determined by looking at them.
One thing interesting about the audiences I'd imagine you have coming to your concerts together is that, well, Ronnie, your audience through the Weavers dates back to the 40s and 50s, and Holly Near, you've been performing for
since about 1971 nationally. I mean, I started singing when I was seven, but in terms of nationally, 71, yeah.
And the Weavers' music is probably most associated with the labor movement and the folk music revival. And Holly, your music has been very associated with the women's
recently,
music,
yeah. Earlier than that, it was much more in relationship to the farm workers and the anti-war movement and solidarity mm-hmm. struggles around the. It's sort of the last few years it's been identified more with women's music.
Do the audiences get along well, especially in the area of sexual politics? Since Holly, I know you have a large gay following. And I'm not sure how
we haven't seen any fights break out yet. As a matter of fact, one of the things that was terribly moving to me in San Francisco. See, I have these new contact lenses, which have changed my performing life. I now can see the audience. I've spent my entire performing life without actually seeing my audience. But I stood there singing with Holly on one of her songs, as the whole audience was doing, and there was a table with gray-haired people, gray-haired like my own, husband and wife sitting there holding each other's hands, tears pouring down their face, singing, "We are a gay and lesbian people." It was maybe the high point of my life, of my performing life, to see that happen. So to how they get along, I think they get along real good.
The nice thing, too, is to it just blows all your assumptions to talk to our audience, because you can see another group of gray-haired people sitting at another table, and they are gay people. Or you can see a group of youngsters over there, and they're out on their first date with their girlfriend, boyfriend, you know, and you can have people who maybe are identified most obviously with the gay or lesbian community, but they're doing solidarity work with Nicaragua or El Salvador. So the glorious experience of both being at the concert as well as doing this kind of music and meeting these kind of people is that it gives you an every day you get a sense of the expansiveness, the wholeness, the completeness that a human being, what the human potential is, and breaks out of those little narrow visions that we have. It's very energizing work.
Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert are my guests. And I'd love it if you could do another song for us now.
Well, we could do that song Ronnie was just talking about. What the hell? Okay. This is a song that I wrote after Harvey Milk, the gay supervisor in San Francisco, was murdered along with Mayor Moscone. And there was a lot of rage from all the communities in the Bay Area of this mindless, violent murder. And people were trying to direct that anger into productive and useful work, because that was Harvey's style. And so in his name, people wanted to continue that work. And lots of different folks are using the song now. It makes me real, real pleased. We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a land of many colors, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a land of many colors, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are gay and straight together. We are gay and straight together, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are gay and straight together, and we are singing, singing for our lives. And then you can throw in any verses you want about any subject as the song goes on.
That's Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert. When you were recording with the Weavers, you went through, I forget what record company you
Well, we actually recorded for two different record companies. In the early days, it was Decca Records. And then later on, Vanguard Records was our recording.
There's a comparison I'm getting to here is that Holly has formed her own record company, which you're recording on now. Mm-hmm. Before we get to like independently recorded music, Ronnie, were there pressures on you when you were with the Weavers to record songs that would be commercially acceptable or to package them in such a way as to make them mainstream?
Oh, yeah. Well, when the very first time we went up to as a group to audition for Decca Records, you see, a man by the name of Gordon Jenkins, who was an orchestra conductor and composer, came down to the Village Vanguard where we were working, and he loved the Weavers. He was really a country boy, and he appreciated what we were doing, and his laugh and his cackle would ring out there every night that he was in New York when we played there 6 months. And so he was recording for Decca Records at the time. He took us up there for an audition, and the record executive said after we sang him a number of songs, "Oh yeah, well we know about you people. we know about Pete Seeger, and we know about you people. Now you know the thing is, what we'll do is we can take your songs and we'll give them to a writer, and the writer will fix them up. You know, you got to decide whether you're going to be good or you're going to be commercial." And he literally said this. And
good
so,
or commercial?
Good or commercial. So we decided we thought we could be good and commercial, but we left. And through a series of things, we came back to Decca, and they did sign us, and we recorded the songs that we had auditioned with, which were Goodnight Irene, Senna, 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 On Top of Old Smokey, Weem Away, and you know those things that later became hits exactly as we did them. Gordon at that time built a kind of orchestral choral thing around them, but the arrangements were ours and we never changed them. But they were in general, when we look at them today in terms of content and what were they about, they were about people loving people and joining hands around the world. They were these terrible subversive songs about let's have peace and dance together instead of fighting with one another
Africa.
And lions in Africa, right? After we were blacklisted, when we couldn't record or be played for anybody, we did a concert at Carnegie Hall, of which the record that Vanguard put out called The Weavers at Carnegie Hall was made. Now, Vanguard did a very interesting thing. Vanguard at that time was recorded mostly classical music, little-known pieces, mostly of Bach, I think, and they did their recording mainly, I think, in Europe. And they wanted to expand, and they bought the masters of our tapes, the ones that we made from the two Carnegie Hall concerts. And they did, I have recently learned, an extraordinary job of mastering those tapes. I understand that they are still thought of as extraordinary in the field of audio engineering, the things that they did with them. With the equipment that was available at the time, which is nothing like what they've got now, they put out this wonderful record.
Were there songs that you couldn't record?
Not for Vanguard. They never, ever. In fact, they encouraged us to do everything we wanted. The Solomon brothers were very fine people and are.
Holly, what led you to start your own label?
Well, I started doing touring with Jane Fonda, actually, with the FTA show, Free the Army. And that opportunity to go and sing for GIs took me out into the Pacific, to the Philippines and Okinawa, Japan. And I began to learn how U.S. military works in other countries, which I, as a farm kid, had not spent too much time experiencing or knowing much about. And I came back having been totally overwhelmed by those experiences, meeting the Filipinos and the Okinawans and the Hawaiians and the Japanese, and getting a sense of what the world was like outside of my little farm town was really something. And I began writing songs and then formed an anti-war group in the United States and traveled around singing that material. And those audiences asked for those songs. I was making little homemade cassettes and sending them to people who wanted to use them at summer camps or on radio programs and documentaries. Finally, I said, this is nuts, you know. High school bands go in every year and make records. I can go in and make a record. So I went into Alex Hasilev's, who was one of the Limelighters. He had an 8-track studio in his home.
and made this little record called Hang In There, which was an album of songs predominantly about the Vietnam War or how people in America were responding to it. There was one or two things that were leaning towards early feminist ideas as well. And I went down to the Board of Equalization, found out you had to get a license and all that, just figured it out step by step, laid the brick down, stepped on it, laid the next brick down, got a mail order situation going, lugged those records from town to town when I toured. And with not the intention of starting a record company, I just wanted that particular music to be available. And I had every intention of going out and getting a major record deal when I had time and got around to it. But the success of that first album inspired us to keep going along, and we eventually did accept the fact that we had formed an alternative record company.
Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert are my guests, and I know a lot of our listeners first got introduced to you as a team through the Weavers reunion movie, wasn't that a time? And on it, you sang in rehearsal a piece together that you wrote, Holly.
Yeah.
Would it be possible for you both to sing that?
That was the first time Ronnie and I'd ever sung together, and I think why there's such an impact in that film is that it wasn't reenacted. It really was the first time we had
sung. Yeah, it was totally spontaneous.
And it was very moving for us as well as what it seems to be now for the viewers of it. This song I wrote when I learned about Chile. Really, after the coup 10 years ago, I didn't really know exactly where Chile was and had not been familiar with the work of Allende and of the song movement that had grown out of that time as a result of Victor Jara and Violeta Parra. And it was later, after the news of the coup hit the papers, that I began to understand what a rich cultural environment had been there prior to Pinochet taking over. And I began doing solidarity work with Chile because I felt so much grief about this wonderful thing that had been going on in this world that was just totally wiped out, and the violence that followed, hundreds of people being arrested and disappearing into nowhere, families not being able to find their loved ones because they had, without any reason, been picked up off the streets and then disappeared. So this song is called Hay Una Mujer Desaparecida, which means there is a woman missing. And it calls out the names of 8 women who really do exist. We don't know where they are. They're just missing in Chile. But they're symbolic of hundreds of people. And right now, there's a lot of activity in Chile. The people there are just unwilling to accept that kind of violent fascist government anymore, and it's been 10 years and they are back out in the streets and demanding change, and it's a frightening time as well as an exciting one. I hope that that they can change things there and hopefully find some of these people whose names we're about to call out.
Michel Peña Herrera, no olvidar Rosameña Brado, Cecilia Castro Salvadores, Ida Amelia Armada. Hay una mujer desaparecida, hay una mujer desaparecida en Chile y en Chile. And the junta knows. And the junta knows where she is. And the junta knows where they are hiding her. She's dying. Hay una mujer desaparecida. Hay una mujer desaparecida. En Chile y en Chile. Clara Elena Cantero, Elisa del Carmen Escobar, Eliana Maria Espinosa, Rosa Elena Morales. desaparecida. Hay una mujer desaparecida en Chile y en Chile. And the junta knows, and the junta knows where she is, and the junta knows where they are hiding her. She's dying. Hay una mujer desaparecida. Hay una mujer desaparecida en Chile. En Chile, en Chile.
Well, thanks very much for doing that. That's mm-hmm. really good. You've been singing together since that time that you first sang that song together, yeah. off and on, which is about 2 years ago. What are some of the things that you've been exposed to through knowing each other and performing to each other that you weren't in touch with before?
Well, for me, it's walking through a door into a kind of music that I've loved but not ever spent much time doing, and also into another time of performing. The Weavers, when we used to sing in concert halls, sang around a microphone. And sometimes, if we were lucky, there was another microphone for the instruments, you know, sitting down at the bottom of on the stand, you know. Holly and I, after coming together without knowing too much about each other, really, never anticipated the problem that I was going to have that we would both have with my not knowing how to use monitors or great big amplification systems or handheld microphones. It never even occurred to either of us until we got to Chicago, which was our first concert on the tour in April. And I thought I would die, and I didn't know what to do, how to deal with all that sound coming at me. And I kept backing away from it, and Holly kept saying, you can't hear yourself if you walk away. And it took a couple of go-rounds before I was convinced I could really learn that and go through it. But she's very patient, and everybody was very good to me, and I did learn. It was like being dragged into the 20th century at last, in spite of myself. That's just one thing, but all kinds of other things, learning how to give and take with each other on the stage. The Weavers functioned as an ensemble group, and so the give and take for the occasional solos and who was leading the song was no problem. But in these concerts, we're functioning as two soloists working together, and it's a very different kind of experience. I have to learn to take the stage more. Holly is working on her ability to move back to, I don't mean just physically, but to be back up sometimes, you know, and it's wonderful. It's like a new thing, a great new thing for me, I know.
Oh, for me too. Yeah. Wonderful too to be able to sing with someone who has as big a voice as Ronnie. I don't feel like either of us ever have to hold back, and we also know that you can sing very small and tiny and create the same effect. And I think that we are discovering each other's theatrical abilities and trying to let some of those fly loose. And just it's very easy to travel with Ronnie. You know, it might have been this wonderful romantic thing of the coming together of generations or all that kind of stuff, but we might not have liked each other. We really lucked out, you know. Not only do we like each other and the audiences like us, we like the people we work with, we like the women at Redwood Records and how they present these tours for us, and we like the history that we each come from. And between the two of us, we represent a very different cultural and historical backgrounds, and it could have been a disaster, and it wasn't. The other thing, too, that we're finding is like we've heard many mother-daughter teams say that maybe the mother was in the kitchen working and called her daughter away from her homework, said, come in here. I want you to see Ronnie Gilbert on this movie. They're playing it on TV. And the daughter will come in and look and see Ronnie, and then she'll go, Mom, that's Holly Near. And they introduce these two people to each other, you know.
We've had wonderful letters from people that are, like that. Mothers and daughters that are communicating around that hadn't communicated before.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for visiting with us on Fresh Air and especially for performing.
It's nice to have a radio station like this in the world.
Well, thanks.
Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert in an interview recorded last year on Fresh Air. Near and Gilbert have recorded an album together called Lifeline on the Redwood record label. They first performed together in a rehearsal for the Weavers' 25th anniversary concert, a concert which is documented in the film Wasn't That a Time? This is a selection of the album of the Weavers' 25th anniversary reunion concert at Carnegie Hall.
Saturday night, I got married. Me and my wife settled down. Now me and my wife are parted. I'm gonna take another stroll downtown.
And now it's time to say so long. We're feeling young and fine. Before we have to end our song, let's sing it one more time.
The Weavers. That was the close of the album of the Weavers' 25th anniversary reunion concert at Carnegie Hall.